we're holding on Ayin Bez Amud Aleph, the fifth line. Mishnah talked about the matter of selling wine to a goy and drawing a distinction between whether you decided on a price and then measured it or the other way around. Because the problem is, if you decide on the price and then the goy measures the wine, by the time he measures the wine and touches it and makes it yain nesach, it's not yours anymore, and therefore you'd be allowed to be paid for it. And it's not considered having benefit from Yayin Nesach, whereas if he measured it first, then you have a problem because now he made a Yayin Nesach, and now you're going to be paid, and now you're going to be paid for it. So in that connection, therefore, the Gemara has been talking about a number of issues in that connection regarding the halachas of buying and selling and what kind of kinyan is valid when it comes to a goy. In connection with this Mishnah, this is topics that would largely be in Bava Basra, but here we're talking about it in connection with it comes up in connection with this Mishnah. This one place where all of this is negeya as far as what kind of kinyanim a goy can do is, for example, as far as mechiras chametz, because you have several different opinions. What kind of kinyan is valid when it comes to mechiras chametz? For example, they do a number of different kinyanim to make sure that the sale is valid. Anyway, so the Gemara continues on this topic of buying and selling, and where our Mishnah bears on it. The Gemara says, "Ahu gavra de omel lechavre." There was a certain person who said to somebody else, "Im zabnin lo lahar ara." If in the future I sell this land, this field, lacham zabnin lo, then I will sell it to you. So in other words, Pashat, you know, you have, Reuven has a field. Shimon one time comes by and says, you know, I'd sure like to buy that field, which he shouldn't necessarily be doing. He might be over on Lois Achmod, or at least Lois Ava, by doing that, but in any case, whatever. So Reuven says to him, you know what, right now, it's not on the market, but if whatever is on the market, then fine, I'm willing to sell it to you. And Rashi adds, they also made a kinyan, because otherwise it would just be words, and words are certainly not binding. Anyway, also Zabna le'inishachrin, and eventually when Reuven put the field up on the market, he ended up selling it to somebody else. So what happens? Can Shimon come and say, wait, you made a kinyan with me? Amar Rabbi Yosef, kana kama. So Rabbi Yosef says, the first one, Shimon has made a kinyan, and therefore it has to be. The third party, Levi, who bought it, in effect, he bought it as an agent on behalf of Shimon. It's similar to, for example, you have, let's say, the Din of Bar Metzra. You have the case that we learned back in Bava Metzia, where Reuven has a field and Shimon that for sale, and Shimon is the adjoining landowner, and Shimon, therefore, has the first right to buy that field. And if Reuven puts it up and Levi buys it, then in effect we say that so Shimon can go to Levi and say, listen, here's your money, and I'm taking over the field because I'm the Bimetzra. So the same way over here, Shimon would have, says Rabbi Yosef, Shimon would have the right to go to Levi and do that. Omale Abaya, because after all, there was a kinyan. So Rabbi Yosef says, therefore, that kinyan is valid. Actually, in Shulchan Aruch, when it brings this din, it brings it a little bit differently. It brings it with a lashon that if I sell this field, it's sold to you from now, l'mafreya, for X amount. So implying, in other words, that in order for the kinyan to be valid, he would actually have had to say such a thing. So Taz and the Nesivis, actually, in Shulchan Aruch, explain over there because the question is, is it a kinyan on a future action? Is it a kinyan on a smachta or something? And therefore, it might not be valid. But if he says, me'achshav, I'm selling it to you as of now, then for sure it would be valid. There are in fact goinim and rishonim that have that girsa in the Gemara over here. That it's not just mizabnin alah mizabnin alah, but rather mizabnin alah melacha me'achshav. Anyway, so the point is, Rabbi Yosef says, therefore it's valid, and therefore, yes, Shimon is going to have the right to go to the new buyer, to the third party, Levi, and give him his money and take over the field. Amalei Abaya says, well, like Pasek, wait a minute, they didn't set a price when he set a kinyan, they made a kinyan that he's going to sell it to him, but they never made up a price. So how did he know? There's no smichus das, there's no mental guarantee that he's going to actually buy it. What if the price is too high?
and continues Abayo Munotemer de Cholhecha de like Posak like Kana. Where am I getting this idea that if there's no price decided, then it's not a valid Kinyan, even though something else was done which in and of itself would be a valid Kinyan? From our Mishnah, the Tanan, as we learned in our Mishnah. A person sells wine to a goy, Posak Adshalay Madat, if he set a price before the goy measured the wine, Dom of Mutarin, then the value of the wine is Mutar because now. So now when the goy does meshicha or whatever form of hagbah or whatever form of kinyan he does that acquires the wine, then that works and he did it while the wine was still mutter, and therefore before he picked it up and made it yain nesach by sloshing it around or whatever, and therefore you're allowed to be paid for it mutter actually posek. But if you measured it before you set the price gam of asurin, then the money of it is mutter. Because now, when he picked it up, at that point, he wasn't koneh, because they hadn't decided on a price yet. And now it became yayin nesach, by him picking it up and sloshing it around in the barrel, and now you're going to get paid for it, and that's a problem, because you're getting paid for yayin nesach. So you see, says Abaya, that even though the goy did hagbar or meshicha or what have you, there's a difference whether the price was set or not. So the same way over here. Yes, they made a kinyan that Reuven is going to sell Shimon this field, but where is the amount that they decided on that it's going to be paid for it? So the Gemara says, okay, that's a good point. My havia law. So what's the bottom line? Does it work? Does this kinyan work or not? I said, what do you mean, my havia law? What do you mean? What do you mean? What's the bottom line? Could come in. We just said you have the proof from our Mishnah that unless they decided a price in the kinyan that I'm going to sell these, that I'm going to sell you this field in the future, is not effective. One says that's not really a solid proof. It's different maybe because in our Mishnah we're dealing with Yain Nesach. And Yain Nesach, after all, the whole reason Yain Nesach is Osir is because the goy may have poured it or sloshed it or whatever for the sake of Avodah Zarah, and therefore so it's related to Avodah Zarah, which after all is the subject of our Masechta, so therefore we can say that the Chachamim were Machmir and say that Meshicha without deciding a price is not effective, and therefore you have a problem when he measured it out and did Meshicha before they agreed on a price. That doesn't necessarily prove that in other cases where you don't have that consideration of Yain Nesach, that the same thing should apply. Maybe the Kinyan is effective whether the price was made up or not. So you don't have yes, Abaya is bringing a proof from our Mishnah, but maybe that's not such a solid proof because maybe Yain Nesach is a special case. All right, the Gemara says Toshma. Fine, let's try to bring another proof. The Amr of Idi Ba'ovin, Rabbi Idi Ba'ovin says Uvda Haba Beir of Chista. Such a case happened exactly that in the Yeshiva of Rav Chista, exactly that where Reuven had promised Shimon that I'll sell you this field when the time comes, and they made a kinyan, etc., etc. And now, in the event, Reuben went and sold it to Levi, and the case was brought to Rav Chista, Rav Chista bei Rav Huna, and Rav Chista in turn went to Rav Huna to ask the question, because Rav Chista himself, the pashtus, didn't know the answer. Or Detanya, it says on the side, and Rav Huna answered it based on the following Mishnah, or Detanan, we have Mishnah. Detanya actually is a Braisa. It is in fact a Braisa. The Braisa describes as follows: You have a person is bringing a person has a bunch of donkey drivers carrying his produce. The donkey drivers then were all kind of like truck drivers. Now, when you had a large amount of produce to transport, you would hire donkey drivers to transport it for you. So now a person has a bunch of these donkey drivers, a bunch of these truckers carrying produce of his, and he has other chamorav would be donkey drivers. Poyalov would be, Rashi explains, ones who are carrying sacks of it or whatever on their shoulders. So now a person has a. So now Reuben comes by selling produce. Shimon is interested in buying that produce, and Moshe Chamorav Upoyalov, so he pulls in the donkey drivers and the workers into his chotzer, v'ichnisam l'seich beisoy, and he brings them into his chotzer. Now Rashi explains that we don't mean that the. That pulling these people in is not the kinyan. He has to actually do meshicha on the produce itself, but right then it's not kinyan chotzu either because it's still on their shoulders and on their donkeys. But now it's inside his chotzer and they're going to and now they're going to start measuring out and deciding prices. So now, at this point, Shimon, who brought them into his property, doesn't know yet how much he's going to want to buy, and maybe he knows how much he's going to want to buy, but he doesn't know how much Reuven is going to charge for it. So then, whether they decide between them on a price and then after, before they measure it out, before they measure it out. So here they made a price, but there's no Kenyan yet, because remember, pulling, as it actually just pointed out, pulling the workers and the donkey drivers in, and produce is still loaded on their shoulders and on their backs, is not yet considered a Kenyan. So whether they first decided on the price and then measured it out, which then is a Kenyan, bein modded actually posek, or whether the other way around you measure it, and thereby do a Kenyan, and you didn't set the price, either way, loikona, either way, there's no Kenyan yet. Because you need both. So either one can back out of the deal. Because even in the first, when Posek actually modad, so then there's no Kenyan yet. They only decided on a price, and deciding on a price is not yet a Kenyan. The second possibility where they measure it, so measuring in and of itself would be a Kenyan, because you're doing Hagbar or Meshichar or Kenyan Chosser or what have you, but no price has been set yet, and therefore it's also not a Kenyan. So therefore either side is able to back out of the deal. On the other hand, continues the Braisa, on the other hand, if he took them off, if he unloaded it from the workers and from the donkeys, and brought it into his house, and now there's Kenyan Chotzer, so now it will depend. Then if they decide on the price even before the measuring, neither one can change their mind, because once now that he brought it into his Rishus, you have Meshicha, and you have they decided a price, and therefore that's all you need. On the other hand, modded actually posek, but if they measured it first and didn't decide on a price, then either one can back out of the deal if they decide that they don't want to buy it after all, if they decide that they'll find a better customer somewhere else. So you see from this braisa, says Rav Huna to Rav Chista, and Rav Chista in turn to whoever asked him the shaila, to whoever had the din Torah in the first place, that the answer is from this braisa, and here we're not dealing with Yai Nesach, this is just a regular case of buying and selling, where we see that even a Kenyan, unless the price was decided, is not going to be a valid Kenyan. So therefore, that answers our question in the case of the field where Reuven says eventually, Shimon, I'll sell you this field, and they made a Kenyan, and eventually he turns around and sells it to Levi, then Shimon doesn't have any rights over here, because Reuven can say to Shimon, you know what, we never agreed on a price in the first place, and therefore the Kenyan that we made was not really effective. So that's that then. The Gemara says, in continuation of that, a related case, you have a case, a person says to somebody else, now up until now here we were talking about where he just said that I'm going to sell it to you, and he never made up a price, and therefore that was the whole discussion over here, whether that Kenyan is going to be effective since no price was made up in the first place. But now a related case, what about when they did make a price? What about when they did make up the price? A certain person, Reuven, says to Shimon, if I ever decide to put up this field on the market, then I will sell it to you for 100 zuz, and they made a Kenyan. So here you don't have the flaw from before that we don't have a price, now we have a price. But in this case, when he sold it to Levi, he wound up selling it for 120. What's the deal then? So Rav Kahana says the original one, Shimon, is going to, he made a Kenyan, and then here we have a price was set, and a Kenyan was made, so he acquired it. So he's going to be able to go to Levi and say, here's your 100, which I agreed that I was going to buy it for. As far as the 20, I guess you'll get reimbursed from Reuven, that's not my issue. Maybe Levi is entitled to recoup the whole 120 from Shimon. Whatever the case, Rav Kahana is saying Shimon does have the right to exercise his Kenyan, and therefore to get this field. Maski for Rav Yaakov in the Harp Kud, but Rav Yaakov from the Harp Kud objects to that and says, wait a minute, this is a different case. Hai Zuzi Ansuhu. Here, in effect, Reuven didn't sell the field with full willingness. with the money was onus him. It was almost like there was an onus over here, because here he has, like, this should have been worth 100, and somebody is willing to offer him extra 120, and he wouldn't have sold it otherwise. So the original Kenyan that Shimon made with him was that he's going to buy it for 100, but there was never a deal over there that if somebody else offers him a better price, and therefore you can say in effect he's so to speak forced to sell it by the fact that so in other words, you could say the Kenyan was, if I decide on my own free will to sell it. But here, in effect, it's kind of, obviously there is free will involved. He's not literally being forced to sell it, but nevertheless, it's as if there's an onus because of that extra price. So now Rishonim do point out, if he told her, if to begin with, when they made the Kenyan, he said that I'm going to sell it to you, even if somebody else offers a higher price, then of course Rabbi Yaakov's objection wouldn't hold, and therefore Shimon would have the right to it. A related point that Rosh points out, what about if Shimon says, fine, I'll pay the 120, nevertheless, though, he still doesn't have the rights, because, again, the it was all based on the idea that it was going to be for 100. So in other words, the simple case of all Gemara is, he said, I'll sell it to you for 100. Now he sold it for 120, and Rabbi Yaakov and Ahab Kurd is arguing the Kenyan is not effective in that case. So now, the Rosh is saying, even if Shimon were to say, fine, I'll pay the 120, it's still doesn't work. On the other hand, if when they had to begin with, when they made the Kenyan, Reuben had said to Shimon, whatever price somebody else offers, I'm still willing to sell it to you for 100, then obviously he has to hold to that. And the Gemara says, except Rabbi Yaakov and Ahab Kord, the halacha is in fact like Rabbi Yaakov and Ahab Kord, and therefore Shimon is not going to have any rights to this field. Unless to begin with they added that when they first made the Kenyan, that no matter what somebody else offers, I'll give it to you. Fine. Continues the Gemara. Now, what about then? You can have cases where they debate what the price should be. So far we had no price was set at all for the field. Then you can have a case where the price was set and then somebody else in the event offered more. Now, what about Amalek Kedeshayli Betlosa? What about if Reuven says to Shimon, when it comes time, when I decide to sell this field, when I decide, for example, that I want to move away and I don't want a field here anymore, or whatever. So now, instead of deciding a price now, what we'll do is I'm making a Kenyan that in the future I'll sell it to you according to whatever price three decide is a fair market price for it. So three constitutes a basin. So we could be talking about specifically where it refers to this case where Reuven is saying in advance to Shimon, if I ever sell this field, I'll sell it to you. That's how the Rambam learns it. The Beis Yosef points out that it really doesn't have to be referring even to that. It could be referring just to a plain old sale where Reuven is saying where Reuven puts up a field for sale, and Shimon comes in and says, I'm interested in it, and Reuven tells him, as far as the price, we'll have three people evaluate it and decide by that. Either way, the point is, in other words, that now they make a Kenyan on it. So fine. Once the panel of three decides, and they both agree that they're going to go according to that to what that panel says, then therefore the Kenyan is effective. So it's not like the cases that we had. It's not like the case we had before where no price was set at all. That's the point of our Gemara. And then. The point is, the Gemara says you don't even need all three of them to agree. After the Tremi Goetzlosser, even if only two of the three of them agree to the price, that's fine, because since you're talking about a Bastion, just like in a Bastion for Dini Mominus or anything, you don't need a unanimous verdict. It's enough to have two to one. The same way over here, two of them decide it's worth 100. The third one says no, it's worth only 90. Then we're still going to go according to the evaluation of the two. On the other hand, if he uses the expression as it was said by three, so when he says kedeshayimi b'tlosa, as it's going to be evaluated by three, that means in effect he's saying as it's going to be evaluated by a beis din, and a beis din doesn't have to be unanimous. But if he says kedeamri b'tlosa, but if he says as it's said by three, so that means in other words he wants that. So now it means in other words that he wants all three of them to say the same thing. So then it won't work. It won't be a binding contract unless all three of them agree to it. What about if he says Kiddushayimi Barba? If he says it's going to be according to what four say, now four is any more than a Beis Din. So once you're mentioning four, then you're clearly not doing it as a point of Beis Din. So then Ad Da'ami Barba, then it would have to be that all four of them agree to the price. So the only case where we can go by a majority is where three, which is the composition of a Beis Din, and he says Kiddushayimi as they evaluate it. So then it means whatever, in any case of Dinim Mominus, when a Beis Din of three evaluates, it's enough to have two of them make the evaluation. It's enough for two of them to agree on an evaluation, and then we're good. When he says that what they say, then it has to be unanimous. And if he's saying that what four evaluate, then it also has to be unanimous. All the more so if he says as four say, we're there. Even if he says as three say, it means all three have to be unanimous. So there's all the more so when he says as four say, we have four, which is more than a Beis Din. So he's not doing it as a Beis Din, but rather as I want X number of experts. And he says as they say, implying that they say something. So then it would have to be that all four of them unanimously agree on a price in order for that, then it's binding. And then their kinyan takes effect, and now the price, and now the selling price of the field will be established as that. What about another case? What about if Reuven the seller says to Shimon the buyer, it's going to be as it's appraised by three, which we said it doesn't have to be unanimous, it's enough for two out of three. What about the also tloss of a shemur? So now let's say three came and evaluated it and decided on price, but now the other one says, whichever other one it is, says, I want three other ones who know the price is better. So in other words, they first had three came and evaluated it, and they came up with a price, and one of them, either Reuven or Shimon, depending, says, you know what, I'm not really satisfied with that evaluation, I want a new evaluation. So now the Ritva talks about that. The Ritva talks about if they did like a Zabla Beis Din, if they decided the original three by both of them, then no, you can't. You don't have a right to go and say I want different ones. And vice versa, if one of them picked without consulting with the other one, then of course that's not going to work either. The other one for sure has the right. So what's the case we're talking about over here where we should discuss the question whether he has the right to demand other evaluators? So the Ritva explains, we're talking about where one of them, before they even chose the evaluator, says, you know, I shouldn't have committed myself in the first place. You know what? I don't want to pick anybody, because then once I pick, then they're going to go and evaluate it, and then my kinyan is going to be chal, because now we're going to have a price. So you know what? I don't want to pick any. So in other words, the case that the Ritva says would be like this. To begin with, Reuven says to Shimon, I'll sell you this field, and then for whatever three evaluators agree is the fair price, and Shimon agrees to that, and they make a kinyan. Now, Shimon, let's say, says to himself, you know what, I really don't want to go through with this deal after all. What am I going to do? I made a kinyan already. Fine, when it comes time to pick those three evaluators, I won't pick any. And then if we don't have the evaluators, then the thing will never take effect. So then Reuven goes and picks evaluators on his own. So now Shimon didn't object to those, so now does he have the right to object to them? So I'm going to pop a dinner who dema active. So the papa says that in that case he would have the ability to block the matter, because you can say that the ones that you picked are not really experts enough. Says why? Who says that the second three are going to know the price is better? Maybe the first ones actually know better. Why should we allow Shimon in this case to block the deal and to stall for time by saying, I don't like these original evaluators that you, Reuven, picked, and I demand other ones? He shouldn't be able to block it because of that. The Ritva and the Beis Yosef talk about them. So what about if it is obvious that the second ones are better experts, then maybe that would work. So on the other hand, the fact is that Amram and the Tur, when they bring this halacha, the Beis Yosef points out that Amram and the Tur don't bring any such distinctions, and not necessarily would it be valid. And the Gemara says the Hilchsak Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua, the halacha is like Rav Huna Brei Rav Yeshua, that he doesn't have the right to say that I want Davka the second three. Listen, you had your chance. You could have picked the three. You could have helped pick the three. You didn't. Reuven picked them instead on his own, and you were there and you didn't object. So now you don't have the right to object, and whatever they say stands, and now the Kenyan is valid, and now you don't have any right to back out of it, and you have to pay that price and buy the field. Getting back now to matters directly of Yain Nesach, finished for the moment with this matter, with these matters of Dinim Mominus, the Mishnah says, Notel Samashpech, suppose that a Yid takes a funnel, and he uses that funnel to pour into a container belonging to the Goy. So he poured it through this funnel into the goy's container. Then he took the same funnel and goes and measures into another yid's container. Now the question is, did it become yain nesach from measuring the wine for the goy? Given we're going to discuss in the Gemara the whole matter of you have a stream of liquid flowing through this funnel and into the goy's container, is that maybe a problem? So we're going to see about that. So the Mishnah doesn't deal with that matter yet of the stream, but rather the Mishnah says in Yeshvei Akeves Yain, at the bottom of the funnel there's an area where wine can collect, where even a drop of wine can collect. Sometimes a funnel is made in such a way that you have, you know, the top is wide, the bottom is narrow. Obviously, that's how a funnel works. But sometimes you have that the bottom of it has like a lip around it on the inside where some liquid, where a little bit of liquid can collect, and then where a little bit of liquid can collect. So now you have a problem. Also, then the wine that's poured through that funnel afterwards into another yid's container is going to be also, because now the problem is that you have that wine that was left over that he poured through the funnel into the goy's container, a little bit of wine was left there that touched it. And now you're going to be pouring more wine, which is going to touch that drop and become oster and so forth. Each bit of wine is going to oster the next one that's poured in, and therefore you're going to have a problem over here. As we'll see in the Gemara, the details about it. How did that one drop become oster in the first place? We're going to deal with that point. Continues the Mishnah. If a person pours out wine from one keli into another one, and he's pouring out into a goy's container, that is, then the wine from which he's pouring is mutter, the top one. The Gemara is going to explain. Rashi points out, we're talking about that the goy is pouring the wine. Now, earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara had dealt with it, earlier in the previous Perek, and parts of our Perek, the Gemara had dealt extensively with the problem of Koichai. The problem is, when you have wine that's moved by or poured, or sloshed by the power of a Goy, then you have the problem over there that while he's doing that, he may be pouring or sloshing it in honor of Avodah Zarah and making it Yain Nesach. So now we're talking about that the Goy is doing that. He's picking up a barrel and pouring from it. So the top container from which he's pouring is mutter, as we're going to see in the Gemara. The Gemara is going to start with the assumption that we're talking about a yid pouring, and it's going to discuss that, and then it's going to end up saying we're talking about a goy pouring. The point is, Rashi says the chiddush of this part of the Mishnah is that we're not going to say that this whole point that if he pours it, it's going to be also as yai nesach. That's a chumrah d'rabbanan. They're not going to impose that chumrah in a case like that where he's pouring from one container into another. That's she'idol soichay also, but the one that he poured into is going to be also. Because that one, it came there from his koyach, it came into that container from his koyach, and therefore you have a problem that he may have had Avodah Zarah in mind while he's doing that. Well, so the Gemara is going to bring a point about this matter of streams of liquid and other things, of connections of liquid like that, and see how that relates to our Mishnah, and whether we can use that to explain the din in our Mishnah, of the two dinim in our Mishnah about the drops of wine that collect at the bottom of the funnel, and as far as the case of pouring from one container into another. So the Gemara says, Tznanhos, so we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Taharis, and nitzik, when you have liquid being poured from one container into another, and you have a vertical or almost vertical stream of liquid going through. Going through a pipe or being poured on the outside, whatever. The cataphorus, and then you have liquid going down a slope, running down, let's say, the slope of a mountain or something, or mashka tefeah, or you have a case, so let's say, for example, so the case of nitzah, because let's say you're going to have, in connection in Mishnah's Taras, talks about over there as far as Tumah v'Tara, so let's say you have a case over there where you're pouring from a Tahor container into a Tumah container. So is that column of liquid going to be in the Tumah, the liquid in the top container by virtue of the fact that they're touching? Cataphorus would be, let's say, so you're pouring not in the air, but rather, let's say, down a hillside, or down a diagonal board, or a board laid out on a diagonal or something. Or mashka tefeach, or a third case where you have a flat area and you have liquid over there, which is wet enough, tefeach, but not tefeach amanaslat piach. There's liquid over there on the surface. But it's not so wet, it's not so moist that if you touched it with one hand and then touched that hand to your other hand, that it would become wet. That kind of thing is called tefeach hamanas lapiach. That kind would definitely be considered a connection because it's on a flat surface, unlike the other two, and it's tefeach hamanas lapiach. But here we're talking about it's a flat surface, but also only tefeach. It's enough to get your hand wet, but not hamanas lapiach, not enough to make that hand will make another hand wet. Anyway, the Mishnah says, "Einich chibur lo l'tumah v'lo l'tara." It's not considered a connection between the two bodies of liquid, neither as far as tumah nor as far as tara. So, as far as tumah, Rashi explains. Let's say, for example, that you have a tumah person were to touch the liquid in the bottom barrel, which then you're pouring into it from the top one as a nitzik or cataphorus or whatever, then the top one wouldn't become tumah by that, and vice versa. And similarly also when you have the partially moist area in the middle over there where you have, again, it's tefeach, but not tefeach, amanaslat piach. If a tomei person touches the liquid on one side of that, the pool of liquid on one side of that, then it's not matame, the one on the other side. So it's not a connection as far as tumah, velo the tara, but also not as far as tara. For example, Rashi says to make that two mikvois should be considered, each of which is less than 40 saw, should be considered as connected. You can have two mikvois connected through a hole or something, and they join together for 40 saw, but not if the connection between them is a nitzik or cataphorus or whatever. Another point we're trying to make, another example of that would be the concept called hashaka, where you have a container of water which became tameh, and you want to tire the water, so you touch the water, you bring the container to a mikveh, and you immerse it into the water of the mikveh, and the water inside the container touches the water of the mikveh, and thereby it becomes tahor. That's not going to work if the connection is a nitzik or cataphras or tefeach, but not almanas lapiach. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, hash burden, but when you have liquid in a collection, in a settled place where it's not flowing, and it's deep enough to be tefeach hamanas lapiach, chibur l'tumah v'l'tara, then it will be a connection as far as tumah and tara. So there you have. So Rashi Burden comes from the word shova, which means broken. So let's say, for example, Rashi explains, you have broken ground where you have water collected inside the crack over there, and you have on one side of it is a pool of water, and on the other side is a pool of water, let's say, so then it'll be a connection as far as tumah and tara. So if a tamei person touches one part of it, then all of it will become tamei. And if one of them is a partial mikveh and the other is a partial mikveh, then they're going to connect together. There, it's a little more complicated than that when it comes to connecting mikvahs, because you need a certain size of the crack. But we're not getting into that level of detail. The point is, in other words, that it has to be, in order for it to be connected, it has to be on the same level, and it has to be on the same level and deep enough to be tefeach hamanas lapiach. So now, how does that relate to Yain Nesach? Omer Rav Huna, Mitzvah for Kataphras, Mashka Tefeach, Kibul in Yain Nesach. These kinds of connections are considered a connection as far as Yain Nesach. Rashi is mentioning that Rashi mentions only Nitzik, and it seems that Rashi's gusa was that Rav Huna is saying specifically by Nitzik, not by Kataphras and Mashka Tefeach. On the other hand, all Gemara, all gusa has all three. So the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Huna, Rav Nachman, Rav Huna, Amenalacha. So Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, where are you getting that from? Where do you get that Yain Nesach should be different than other matters of Tumah v'Tara in this regard? Are you going to tell me because of the implication of that Mishnah we just quoted, where the Mishnah is saying it's not considered a connection neither as far as Tuma nor as far as Tara, and you're going to infer from that, the Mishnah is saying only as far as Tuma and Tara are we not going to be machmir with that, but when it comes to Yai Nesach, we're going to add an extra Chumrah and say that it is considered a connection. The Gemara says no, Ema Sefer. So says Rav Nachman, no, Ema Sefer, because look at the next part of that Mishnah, Ha'esh Burden, where we said that if there's cracked ground and liquid inside the cracks, Chibur the Tumah or the Tara, then it is a connection as far as Tumah and as far as Tara. What are you going to say, the Tumah or the Tara who dehavi Chibur hold it in Yain Nesach lehavi Chibur? Are you going to try to make the same inference there and say that only as far as Tumah or Tara is that liquid in the crack in the ground connecting two bodies of water going to be considered a connection, but not as far as Yain Nesach? Obviously not. There'd be no reason to say it shouldn't work by Yain Nesach as well. Obviously, therefore, you can't really infer anything from this Mishnah, and the Mishnah is just using parallelism, one part parallel to the other, so that you can more easily remember it, and you can't necessarily derive a point from the Mishnah's mention of Tumah V'Tara, that the same concept shouldn't apply also to, that the same concept should or shouldn't apply to Yain Nesach. So where are you getting the idea that it does apply to Yain Nesach? So the Gemara continues. Well, now our Mishnah is going to factor in over here. So the Gemara says, "Now let's look at our Mishnah." Notlos hamashvich. We said a yid takes a funnel, umadr l'sech tzechisr shal oved kechavim, and he pours through the funnel wine into a goy's container. V'chazer umadr l'sech tzechisr shal Yisrael, and then he takes the same funnel without washing it first. Obviously, we're talking about, and he uses it to pour into a container of a yid. Also, so the Mishnah had said if there's a lip around the bottom of it inside the funnel, there's a little lip over there where some wine can collect. Also, so now the wine that's poured through afterwards into the yid's container is going to be also because it gets mixed with that drop that was left over there. Tosfos points out actually the Gemara is going to tell us in a couple of more dafim that when you have containers that we use for measuring Yain Nesach require in order to kasher them, they require a process called niguv, which is basically scouring it with water and ashes in order to scour out any residue of Yain Nesach. So Tosfos points out over here, well, isn't the funnel itself? Never mind the question of a keves yain, of that little lip at the bottom. According to Rav Huna, that we're talking about, that nitzuk is enough for it to be considered a connection. So you're pouring through the funnel. It's going through the funnel, and you have a stream of liquid connecting the top container and the bottom one, which is the goy's container. That alone, even without a keves yayin, according to Rav Huna, should be enough to make the funnel has now in effect been used for yayin nesach, and therefore you should have to kasher it. So never mind a keves yayin or not. So first Tosfos brings first of an Atam says there may be a difference what the funnel is made out of. There we're talking about a funnel made out of earthenware, which is very absorbent. Here we're talking about one made out of wood, which is not so absorbent. Then Tosfos says Rabbeinu Tam changed his mind and said that no, the point is there you're talking about that it's constantly being used for a goy's wine, and therefore now it absorbed a lot over its useful lifetime. So now when you a yid buy this funnel from the goy and you want to kasher it and start using it for kosher wine, then you need nigu. If you were talking about you're doing a one time thing and the even according to Rav Huna, the Chacham Monach and the Gozer, unless there's a keves yayin, unless there's that lip at the bottom where wine can collect. Tosfos also adds that because it's one thing if it was containers, where at least even if you have a person uses a container short term, but a container by definition is meant that it could be used long term, whereas a funnel obviously can't be used long term. So the only way it would become osur, the only way it would require kashering with niguv would be if it was used over and over and over again for Yain Nesach, not a one time thing like this. Okay, so anyway, so the Gemara continues, Ha keves yayin b'maika mitzvah. Now you have to ask, fine, you're saying that because there's this lip over there, a little wine collects at the bottom, and as you pour wine through afterwards, it touches that and gets mixed with that. Nu, how did that drop become also in the first place? La v'nitzvah, says Rav Huna, wouldn't it be obviously through nitzvah? You have the column of wine being poured from the yids, from the cellar's container, through the funnel, into the goy's container, because you have this akebes yayin, you have this lip over there, therefore, throughout the process, drops of wine are collecting there and then falling off, collecting there and then falling off. At the end, you have a little wine left over there in that lip. And the next time, then, when you go and take that same funnel without rinsing it out, and you go and use it for a yid's wine, then it's touching that drop. But how did that drop itself become also must be because of nitzit? Otherwise, it never touched the goy's. Otherwise, if you're going to say nitzuk is not a connection, then it never touched the goy's wine in the first place. The wine becomes also only when it lands in the goy's barrel. So what's the problem? Shmamin or nitzuk chibur. So wouldn't that be a proof, therefore, that nitzuk is in fact considered a connection? So that would be Rahuna's. That would be Rahuna's point. That would be Rahuna's proof. But the Gemara says that may not necessarily be a valid proof because Toni Rav Chiya, because Rav Chiya taught a braisa, because the case you're talking about over here, when you're measuring through the funnel, is that the wine actually backed up into the wine actually backed up into the funnel. So now, in other words, you're talking about that the funnel was actually, the bottom of the funnel was actually going deep enough into the goy's container, and you filled the container so high that now the wine actually backed up into the funnel. Pochatu literally means that it pressed it. Later, earlier in the Masechta, there was an example as far as being mevatel, a statue of a Vedazara, where you have a case that poch said the fun of, that a person goes and smashes it and presses and smashes in its face and defaces it. So the same way over here, pochatu means that it pressed in. There was so much wine in the bottom container that it pressed into the funnel. So therefore, it's not a matter of nitzut. So it's a matter of you filled it up, and now the wine in the goy's container is obviously yayin nesef from having touched his container, and now the wine in the funnel touched that. So if there was no akevis yayin, fine, you take out the funnel, and you have a little bit of liquid on it, it's not going to be enough, either because it's not tefeach hamanas v'apiach, or because the chum aren't going to be goyzer to that extent, as Tosfos had said. But when you have akevis yayin, you have an actual area where drops of wine can collect over there, you don't need to resort to nitzuk to say that that's why that wine is also. That wine is also because it's actually connected. It's actually directly connected. It's on the same level as the wine in the actual barrel. So that would be the case. So not necessarily is our Mishnah talking about a case of nitzuk. It's talking about a case where the wine in the funnel is actually on the same level as the wine in the rest of the barrel. Then the Gemara says, well, then in that case, then fakir, avaloi p'chasatu tzulachisei mai. So you're going to tell me if that's the case, then Rav Chiya's Braisa is telling you that the case of our Mishnah is p'chasatu tzulachisei. Does that mean that if you didn't have that, then that if it didn't back up into there, if the bottom of the funnel is above the level of the liquid above the level of the liquid in the bottom container, my, what are you going to tell me, Loy? Then you wouldn't have a problem. Well, then Well, then you'd have the answer, then you could infer from on Mishnah and that Braisa that Nitzuk is not a connection. So then it would be a contradiction on Rav Huna. The answer is Loy. No, what the Braisa may mean as follows. When it backed up, then you can say it's Osir. Nitzuk Tiboy, but the case when you only have, the case when you have only Nitzuk, so in other words, that would be the chiddush itself. Don't think that prosatu tzulchisoy is like Nitzuk, and maybe it is Osir, maybe not. You would have a suffix on it. So no, that prasatu tzulchisoy itself is definitely osir. And Tosfos points out, the chiddush of that is, after all, the wine doesn't really stay in the funnel. Ultimately, it pours out of the funnel. Nevertheless, that would be reason enough to ask it. But nevertheless, nitzik tiboy, you could still have the question, when there was nitzik, you could still have the question whether that's enough to ask it or not. So you can't really prove just because Rav Chiya explains that our Mishnah is talking about Pachasu Tzulchisai, where the wine in the bottom of the funnel is the same level as the wine in the bottom container, that doesn't necessarily prove that that's the only case where it would be Osir. Maybe, maybe not. All right, the Gemara says Toshma. Fine, let's prove from the continuation of our Mishnah. The Mishnah had continued, Ma'arim Ikli Likli, a person is pouring from one container into another one, and at this point we assume, here we said before in the Mishnah, Rashi had given us a preview that we're going to be talking about a goy pouring, but at this point the Gemara doesn't know that yet. At this point the Gemara assumes that we're talking about a yid pouring from his container into a goy's container. Es from Ma'arim Menu Mutter, so the Mishnah had said, the one from which he's pouring is mutter, implying how the beni beni osir, implying that what's in the air between them, what's pouring, the column of liquid that's pouring down, would be osir. Shmamina nitzik sibur. Well, that would show that nitzik is considered a connection. I said, wait a minute, in Nitzav Chibur, if you're going to say that Nitzav is a connection, I feel that the Gabi de Mononami Litzar, then all the wine inside the top one would also be also because it's all connected. So the Gemara answers, holy cash. No, because that's not a problem. You're kamaktif ketufi, because you could be talking about where he's pouring, but he's doing it, he's pouring it in little spurts over there. What he does is, in the Gemara we have in front of us, Maktif Ketufi, Rashi brings a different way, the Mafsiki Pasuki, that he interrupts it. What he does is he pours in such a way, he jiggles the top one, so that he pours a little bit out, and then he jiggles it so that the stream is broken, and there's a stream there in the air, but it's not connected to the one on top. So you could be talking about it, in other words, you never have a stream over there uninterrupted. So that would be the point, therefore. The Mishnah is telling you that there's no connection, therefore the one in the top one doesn't become osir. But the point, the Mishnah is saying, though, on the face of it, that what is in the column of liquid that's flying through the air right now, if you were to then all of a sudden put a spoon or a cup there and grab some of that liquid and want to drink it, it would be also, because that's already connected to the one on bottom. Okay, well, the Gemara says, Mekol Makom Nitzik Chibur. Fine, you have a proof over there that Nitzik is a connection. Otherwise, you would say that what's in the air is still mutter. So there's your proof that Nitzik is considered a connection. Well, the Gemara says that's not proof. Fully time meich, because according to your svara that you think that it's a connection, aim a sefer. Look at the continuation of the Mishnah, Again, the Mishnah says only what he poured into is osir. Ha de beni beni shari, which seems to imply that what's in between, what the liquid that's poured, that's flying through the air over there on its way from the top to the bottom, would be mutter. So again, you have the problem that the two parts of the Mishnah don't seem to match up. One is implying that everything outside the top container is osir, and the other one is implying that only what's inside the bottom container is osir. Again, elamahol left the Mishnah minasi. You can't really infer anything from our Mishnah. It means the Mishnah is just you doing it for parallelism, and you're not meant. You can't really prove one way or the other from the Mishnah about the actual liquid. It's clear from our Mishnah what's the liquid that's in the top container is. Mutter, provided that miktaf ketufi, provided that you poured it in that way, interrupting the stream by jerking the top container in order to break the flow. It's clear that what's in the bottom container, because it belongs to the goyas osir, what happens with the liquid in the top, what happens with the liquid in between, which is not attached to the top one, but is attached to the bottom one, that you can't really be clear from our mission what the deal is. All right, the Gemara continues, fine. Tashma, let's try to bring another proof. A braisa says, ha-ma'arim echobis lebur. A person is pouring wine from a barrel. A yid is pouring wine from a barrel into the pit, which at this point we assume again that it means that the barrel he's pouring from is kosher of wine and the pit contains yayin nesach. Kiluach hayod misfas chovis lamata osir. So then the Braisa says the flow which is coming from the edge of the barrel and downward is osir. Why would it be also because of nitzik? So there's a proof that nitzik is considered a connection. Something else says no, because tirgum Rav Sheshes but gechav mama'ara, because the Rav Sheshes explained that brisa. And as we're going to see soon, in our Mishnah as well, we're talking about where goy is pouring it. You're assuming that someone yid is pouring it. No, we're talking about over here where goy is pouring it. The osimi koychay. Now you have the problem that the wine is moving because of the power of the goy. And again, you have the problem that while he's pouring and sloshing it around over there, he may be having in mind nisuch. So it doesn't matter now for our purposes whether the bottom pit is empty or whether the wine in it is kosher. Either way, the point is the wine that's coming out of that container is coming from koychay, and therefore that's osir. The Gemara had dealt with that point of koychay extensively earlier in the Masechta. So now Rav Sheshes's point is that's what the Braisa is talking about. Not necessarily are we talking about nitzel. So in that case, then why wouldn't the wine inside the barrel also be osir? After all, that wine is also moving around because of the goy's koyach. The answer is Koyach David Kacham Midrabanan Hu Da'asu. This whole concept that wine that was moved and sloshed around by a goy should be also is only Midrabanan. Midaraisi, you'd have a problem only if he's actually pouring it out. The whole concept of Yai Nesach, the whole concept of Yai Nesach itself, if he actually poured it for goy, is also Daraisa. The whole concept when a goy touches wine is also itself is Midrabanan. But in other words, the point is that the usual normal way for them to use that for worshipping Avodah Zarah would be actually moving it around, mixing it around with their hands or something like that, not just pouring out a barrel and not touching it. But now when he didn't touch it, he just caused it to pour. So that whole concept is also only Dirabbanan. Hahudin Nafika Baroi goes Rabbi Rabbanan. So therefore, what came out of the container and is flying through the air, that the Chacham goes on, and we're going to say it because that came out of the barrel as a result of his koyach, and therefore we're going to say that part is also. So now, if you were to put a cup there and try to catch some of that liquid that's flowing down over there, then you can't do that. Not because it's touching the wine in the bottom. There may not even be wine in the bottom yet, but just by virtue of the fact that the goy caused it to slough out of the container. Ahud le gavoy, le gozer ben abanan. But when it comes to what's still inside the container, the chacham were not gozer in it, and therefore it remains kosher. So it comes out. So in other words, in short, what we have is there's the question of whether nitzuk is a connection, but here Rav Sheshes is saying a new point. Nitzuk is not necessarily a connection, but you have the fact is whatever the goy pours out of the container is also because it came from his koyach. Rashi says the halacha is like Rav Sheshes, in which case we would say that nitzuk is actually Rashi further on explains that the halacha is like Rav Huna, that nitzuk is considered a connection, because the Gemara is going to go on to continue discussing this point about how you have to pour what if you're a yid selling wine, you're selling to a goy, how do you do it to avoid the wine in your container becoming osir. And the assumption in the Gemara is that we're doing that the whole problem is nitzuk. So and Rashi learns the halacha is that nitzuk is osur, but in our case over here, we're going to say furthermore that we're not going to say that nitzuk is going to go so far as to asur the wine in the if a yid is pouring, then nitzuk can cause a problem. But if a goy is pouring, then you don't have nitzuk, then you don't have an uninterrupted stream over there, then you're not going to have a problem with what remains inside the container. Tosfos discusses in some detail over here that not necessarily the halacha is not necessarily like Rav Huna at all. The halacha may well be like all the objections that we had, that nitzuk is not considered a connection, and Tosfos and Rishonim discuss that in detail. So basically in Shulchan Aruch it says in the end where there's hefs and meruba, then you can rely on Tosfos and say that nitzuk is not a connection, and therefore the wine in the top container is also, but otherwise. Better you should follow Rashi and say that would make it also. And the only way, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, is to make sure the stream is interrupted. So the Gemara continues in this connection. So Rav Chista tells Jewish sellers of wine, when you're measuring out wine for goyim and you have this problem that there might be nitzuk over there, katufi, make sure that you pour it in little spurts over there, like we said, by jiggling the top container to make sure to break the connection. Inami nafsi nafutsi, or even do it from or even do it from a distance. They do it like you take your container and do like a swash from it out to their container from a distance, so there's never this uninterrupted nitzuk stream, and therefore you don't have a problem. So again, Rashi learns that since Gemara is mentioning this point of Rav Chista as halacha, then that would imply that otherwise you have nitzuk and it's a problem. Tosfos says very nice. Rav Chista says that. The fact is, Rav Sheshes, as we just said, seems to disagree with that, and Rav Sheshes is after Rav Chista, and the halacha ought to be like him in the Gemara, and then Tosfos goes and discusses the ins and outs of that in detail. The Gemara continues. Similarly, in this connection, Rava says to people, to Jews who are pouring wine, Again, we have this problem of koichai, the problem of the wine moving by the power of the guy. So Rava tells them, when you're pouring out wine from one container to another, don't allow the guy to come and help you, because you might forget yourself, you might not, like this, on the face of it, you're doing most of the pouring and he's just helping. But for a moment, you might slacken off a minute, the shadisu layalay, and then you're going to end up, the weight of the barrel is going to be all on the guy, because he's koichai, and now the result is that the wine is coming from his koyach, the osir, and then it's going to become, osir. At least what came out of the barrel, fine, as Rav Sheshet says, maybe what stays inside the barrel will remain mutter, but at least what gets poured out is then going to be osir. Tosfos discusses in this connection what happens, for example, let's say you might have you pouring out from a barrel into another barrel, and now you have, let's say, the goy picks up the bottom one in order to help it pour better. So now, so the Ri says, I'm not sure whether it would be osir or mutter on the face. It's pouring, it's flowing either way, but now he's helping it flow better. So is that a problem? Anyway. The Gemara continues, another case in this connection involving wine moving or not moving because of the power of a goy. There was a person who one time was siphoning wine with a siphon, with a tube. Gishta is a tube, bas gishta is a secondary tube. Rashi describes what you do is you take two straws or reeds or whatever, you cut them on an angle to form like a V, to form an upside down V. You put one end of it into the barrel, and then you apply some suction at the other end, and the wine starts flowing. Once it reaches over the top of the V, because liquid tends to stay together, therefore it's going to continue flowing like that. If you ever had to siphon gas from one vehicle to another, it's the same principle. But so the point is, so here you have that there was this siphon, and once he started the suction and got the wine over the top of the V, and it continues flowing down. Now, what happened was, also, a goy came and put his hand on the bottom of the, on the, on the, on the other end of the siphon. So to block the wine from siphoning out any further. So now he's touching that wine on the end. What about the rest of the wine that's all connected to it? Because you have a whole thing of liquid connected over there. Osir Rava, the Kolei Chamra. So Rava said all the wine, even what's in the barrel, is osir. Because it's all connected, it's all touching. So the Papa says to Rava, other says Rabba Masna says to Rava, Ramila Ravina the Rava, other says Ravina said to Rava. So it must have been, I guess, a bunch of Talmidim came in with the same question. But my, how is the wine in the barrel going to become osir? But because of the fact that it touches the wine in the siphon, the nitzik is because of nitzik, shamat minon nitzik chibur. Does that mean that you're paskining that nitzik is a connection? So according to Rashi, fine, yes, the halacha is that nitzik is a connection, but because Rashi had learned that halacha is like Ravuna in that connection. According to Tosfos, the point of the question is, Fakert, we're saying the halacha ought to be like Rav Sheshet, that Nitzuk is not a connection, so then what's the problem over here? So Rav answers, Shiny Hossam, no, because it's different in that case, the Kulich Hamra Agishto Bas Gishli Gorer, because all of the wine is going to follow the wine and the siphon. The whole point, the way a siphon works, is that once it starts flowing out over there, it's going to continue flowing unless it's blocked or unless the siphon is moved. So now, in effect, what you have is all of that wine would have ended up flowing out if the goy hadn't put his finger over there, and therefore, so now it's like he touched the wine in the barrel itself. That doesn't necessarily prove, where you're talking about a case of nitzuk, where blocking the nitzuk doesn't necessarily have any effect on the wine in the top barrel, is not necessarily the same thing. Okay, so the Gemara continues, something else in connection with straws in this connection, also as far as wine moving through straws. The Gemara says, Omer Mazutra Breder of Nachman, Knishkinin Shori, a goy and a yid are allowed to drink together from a knishkinin. Rashi explains, knishkinin is a wide container that has a few straws sticking out the sides of it, which the ends of the straws reach the same height as the inside, as the lip of the container itself. Now, when you pour water or wine or what have you, in this case wine, into the body of it, then those tubes fill up to the same level because the liquid seeks its own height. So now,
The result of it is that that now you can have a few people can drink together. Each person can put their mouth on one of the straws going around the Knishkin in over there, and they can all drink at the same time. And the water, and the wine rather, will all go into the straws and come out of the body of the container at the same rate. So now, the thing is, so now you have a yid sucking from one straw and a goy from another one. Well, okay, but as long as the goy is sucking, the wine is not going to flow back down into the container, so therefore you don't have a problem. Now, the Gemara elsewhere talks about that actually there's a, the Gemara talks about in Shabbos, that maybe after the Churban, you're not supposed to, this kind of drinking from Knishkinin was meant as like, it was a very celebratory kind of thing. It was like the kind of thing that people would do when they really have something to celebrate. So maybe it's not appropriate after the Churban. So now, if Mazutra, Brezer of Nachman is saying that it's Mutter, it would mean, if we're talking about in terms of matters of after the Churban, it would mean he's saying there is no such Gzeira, and you're not allowed, and you're allowed to do that. On the other hand, the context that we're talking about over here, Yain Nesa, would be that we're talking about it's not a matter of Jews drinking together, where it should be also a simcha because of the Churban. We're talking about you're even allowed to do it together with a goy, and there's no concern that the wine is going to flow back down from the goy's straw because he's sucking upward, and therefore it's not going to flow back downward. Still, the point would still be, it is true. You can see from that that it is also mutter to drink from such a container after the Churban. So the Gemara says, "V'hani yili dekodem posik yisrael." However, that would work only if the yid stops drinking first. So then, whatever was in the straw that he was drinking from is going to flow back down. Afterwards, the goy is going to stop drinking. At that point, then the yid has not had any wine that's also because there was no wine that the goy caused to go back down in. Kodem posik dekodem loy. But if the goy stops drinking first, then no, then you have a problem. Because now the wine that was in the goy's straw, it settles back down into the container, and it's because of koicha, it's because of his power. So therefore you would have a problem. This is one of Tosfos' proofs for the point before about Nitzuk not being a connection, because otherwise it ought to be also anyway by virtue of Nitzuk. So the Gemara continues. Rav Bar Rav Huna ikol bei Resh Kolosa. One time, Rav Bar Rav Huna visited the house of the Resh Kolosa. Shorolahu the Mishter the Knishkinin, and he gave them a heter to drink from Knishkinin. So again, well, the point is, he held it's not also after the Churban. And again, maybe even some Rishonim learn it means he allowed them to drink together with a goy from the Knishkinin, as long as the Yid stops drinking first. Ikadami, another version, Rabbi Bar Huna Gufa Ishtibish Knishkinin, another version is that Rabbi Bar Huna didn't give them a het or two, he himself did it. So Tosfos says, okay, what happens if accidentally he doesn't realize and the goy stops drinking first? So Tosfos explains that according to that, the point would not be that he drank together with a goy, but just he drank together with another yid, and the point is it's not also because of the simcha, because you shouldn't have so much simcha after the churban. But on the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that it does mean that in fact he was drinking together with a goy, and he wasn't worried, he knew that he could be careful to stop drinking before the goy does, and therefore again, Nitzuk wouldn't be a problem. The only problem would be if the goy stopped drinking first, and he knew that he could be careful and there wouldn't be an issue with that.